Thanks for joining us today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're starting the show today by talking about Wisconsin's public libraries, what they offer, how you can access resources online, and a whole lot more. And we'll do it with our guest, Ben Mueller, director of the Library Services Team at the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. And as we talk with Ben, and we'll hear from a couple of librarians around the state as well, I hope you'll join in. How do you support your local library? And if you're a librarian, definitely want to hear from you. What are you celebrating? What issues do you have, maybe? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Ben Mueller, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, thanks, Larry. Thanks for having me back again.
We officially recognize our libraries in the month of April, and as I'm sure you've done a lot of reflecting on this, and public libraries here in our state, what makes you most proud of our state's library system?
I mean, there's so much to be proud of Wisconsin libraries. And I was thinking back the last time I was on this show, we talked a lot about COVID, which was a tough time for everyone, right? And libraries were one of those shining lights of being responsive and figuring out ways to alter their service. And they've just always continued to do that. But I think in 2024, when I reflect back on this, one of the things that really stands out to me is our public libraries are one of those places where you can go in any community and you don't have to spend a dime, right? You can just go in there, you're welcomed, you're able to spend as much or as little time in there as you need, and you're able to get resources that are available to you for basically free. I mean, obviously there's tax money that goes into that, and there it's not free. It's not free like that. But you can go in there and you don't have any expectation to spend money, to do anything. You can just go sit. And I think that's a pretty remarkable thing in this day and age, that you can just be in a place and be in a place of community with other folks in your community and not have some other obligation for why you are there. And at the it's one of the most basic things, but just being able to walk into a building and be there is pretty powerful.
You know, I was thinking back to my school days. You know, I think I read every book in our library. And, you know, you think about literacy and increase, to me, that comes through the libraries increasing literacy for children and adults.
Absolutely. I mean, I think when we talk about literacy for kids, there's a lot of modeling behavior that goes on, right? I mean, you go into a story time, and a lot of times you think, well, it's a great way for my kids to gain some literacy skills by going to that story time. But what's interesting to me is that story time isn't necessarily for the kids there. It's for the parents to watch that behavior and model it at home. Because if you go in once a week for story time, that's great. It's a good way to meet people. It's a good way to sort of get out of the house, create those social bonds in a community. But what's really powerful about that is a parent learning like, oh, that's how I read a book to my kid. Because there's, you know, you can learn about that stuff, but like until you see it and see someone model it for you, then you do that 5 other days a week, 6 other days a week at home, that's where you start to see those real gains in literacy and the ability to come into school and know how to start getting ready to learn. Because our schools, the public libraries are a great space for our youth to be ready to learn as soon as they get in the door in 4K in kindergarten, whenever they enter that sort of more formalized environment. If they've got those basic foundational skills of literacy, they're going to do really well. And then, like you said, with adults, and I think something that I think about a lot is artificial intelligence and the literacy around information and misinformation that might be out in the world of the internet. As we live more and more of our lives online, I think the public library is a great resource to build those literacy skills of like, is what I'm seeing true? Is that really a thing that exists? Does this picture exist, or is this something that was created? And I think our libraries, both our public and school libraries, are really crucial parts of that fabric as we enter kind of an age of you don't know what's true anymore.
Well, you're director of library service,
mm-hmm.
at Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. What's that job entail for you?
Well, you know, other than a lot of meetings, no. It's a really, I love what I do, and I love the team that I get to run. So we typically do a lot of statewide services. So some of the services we provide at the state level using state funding is BadgerLink. So Wisconsin's online library. This is a collection of stuff that you would normally have to pay for on the internet. So think whenever you run into those paywalls of like you Google something and then you're like, oh, I got to pay for the New York Times or, you know, something like that, right? Those subscriptions that you can't get behind. We actually license materials like that, newspapers, journal articles, all kinds of things for the state of Wisconsin. Every resident in Wisconsin has access to it. And we use our public libraries and our school libraries as the conduits to get people in there so that we can authenticate them and say they have access to this. And I think it's really interesting. We have popular magazines available there. So when I was looking at some usage statistics to get ready for this interview, some of the biggest, most accessed magazines we have are Better Homes and Gardens, Country Gardens, Martha Stewart Living, Midwest Living, Mother Earth News, stuff like that, that like you can just get for free online. You can get access to that information through BadgerLink. So my team does that. We also provide the platform in which libraries share materials with each other. So we do interlibrary loan services for Wisconsin, which is a fairly magical thing. I mean, it's not magical, it's library science, but we're able to get books. If you are living in Superior and you need a book from Milwaukee, my team will connect those dots for you so that it gets across the state and you can hold that book in your hands and read it, especially for things that aren't digitized or aren't online, or if you just prefer reading something in print, because a lot of people still, I prefer to read things in print. I do both.
Me too. But,
I like holding the book in my hand. I like my bookmark. I like all that stuff. But so interlibrary loan really gets that stuff across. And one of the other exciting programs I think we have is our Wisconsin Digital Archive, which is access to government information that's created from different branches of state government in Wisconsin. So if, say, Department of Transportation writes a report, they put it on their website, they might take it down later, but we archive that and we preserve it so that you can get access to that for years to come. So if you want to look back and say, what was that report from DNR that I remember reading about deer, you know, 10 years ago, we've got access to that, and we're so that you can be more civically engaged with your state government.
Allie, who's a director of Hortonville Public Library, sent us an email, and Allie says, thank you for showing support for our Wisconsin public libraries. She is very proud to belong to the library worker community in the state, and the support for library workers is fantastic. They really create a welcoming third space outside of work and home. There aren't many community opportunities that offer that free space to be. Libraries are more than just books.
Absolutely. And I think, hi, Allie, by the way. But I think it's interesting. Libraries are more than just books, and it alludes to kind of that free space that I talked about earlier. But I think one of the key parts I pick out of that is our library workers are incredible in Wisconsin. I get to travel a lot for my job. I get to go all over the state seeing libraries. And one of the amazing things is just the people you meet at the front desks. It's not always an easy job. You get people yelling at you. You get, it's part of society. It's an open place. So it's not always the best environment, but like they always have a smile on their face and they're so resilient. And one of those things, just thanking people when you go into a library, I think yeah. To anyone listening out there, if you're not a library worker and you go in and you use a library, like hearing thank you as a library worker is one of those amazing things that can like turn your day around, because the job is important. And at the seventh hour of your shift, you might just need to hear thank you for what you do. So yeah. Thank you to Allie for what you do, because I just love seeing people in libraries when I go out and am able to travel the state.
Well, they're the nicest people I know, for sure.
Yeah.
I've never come in contact with one who was in a bad mood, to be perfectly honest. Or if they were, they sure were darn good at hiding it. Mary Ann in Middleton has a comment. Let's go there. Hi, Mary Ann.
Yeah. Hi. I use my local public library for an ongoing nature book club that's been a really wonderful group of people that I would probably not interact with in any other setting. So it's been really good for me to just kind of get inside of the mind of other people unlike myself. And mostly older men and just a variety of personalities. So that's been a good experience. I started kind of late COVID, and then I had a year of homeschooling my tween son, and that book club was just my adult time, kind of the sanity in my week. And the book kind of just gave me that escape and personal time. It forced me to do that and take that, and I appreciated the opportunity. I also used the tween book club for my son during that year of homeschooling, and that was a wonderful combination of encouragement to read, a free book, and social time. I cannot emphasize enough the need for the social time integration into the library services, especially for those middle years and teen years of these kids. They've got to have it, and the library should be finding really creative ways to reach that group of population.
Mary Ann, thank you very much for calling. Comments, Ben?
Yeah, no, I think that that's a perfect example of one of the sort of superpowers that public libraries have. I'm actually rereading Robert Putnam's book, Bowling Alone, where he talks about the collapse of sort of those that ability to informally meet with other folks so that we don't see in society that often. I think book clubs that libraries offer are one of those really good examples of that thing that, like, you get into a space with people who are not like you, and you're there for some other reason, and it just builds those social bonds that are so important to our society and our communities. And I think the idea of tween and teen programming is really exciting. I know I've heard a lot of programs, and it's not surprising, right? So the most popular musician of our time is Taylor Swift. And so the Neenah Public Library, as sort of that mania of Taylor Swift has increased, they've started doing what's called Taylor Swift Night, and they have Swifty parties where they bring people together. They hire a DJ to play Taylor Swift songs. They have kind of like a party. I think they've gotten over 500 participants at one point, lines around the block for people to get in. And of course, they're making friendship bracelets, all of the Taylor Swift things, having photo booths and that stuff that bring people into the library for that reason of, like, and again, that's another one of those social bonds, right? We all like Taylor Swift, so we're going to come together and we're going to celebrate that fact at the library, and then realize, like, oh, like, while I'm at the library, like, there's stuff here that I actually want. There's other stuff here. I can take home Taylor Swift CD, or a lot of the libraries are getting back into vinyl while records are coming back into sort of our popular culture, and you can check out records, especially for those who maybe got a record player to play the new Taylor Swift record. You could be like, there's other stuff out there too. I'm going to listen to some other things. And I'll check it out from the library first, because I might not be able to afford to get my record collection as big as it will be when I'm, you know, when I've been collecting for 20 years. So there's so many things that you can bring in with that kind of programming.
Let's take a call from Kate in Spring Green. Hi, Kate.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to share that I've been a children's librarian in my small library since September, and it is the happiest, most fulfilling job I have ever had. I just love watching kids grow. I love watching them explore the world of ideas with their families, and what better place to do that than your library?
Oh, man. Kate, thank you so much. She's right.
She's right. And hi, Kate. I'm just down the road. I actually live in Sauk City, so I can almost see Spring Green from here. So thank you for doing what you do.
Very much. Ben Miller is director of the library services team at Wisconsin's Department of Public Instruction, talking about our libraries here in the state. Clara Neipert's our producer, by the way. Jeff Robbins and Lee Rayburn are technical directors. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to The Ideas Network from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thanks for joining in today. Larry Mueller here talking today with Ben Miller, director of the Library Services Team at Wisconsin's Department of Public Instruction, as we take a look at libraries. And the whole subject of community has come up here more than once. And Claire Neipert talked with one library director about how her building and items available for checkout have changed over the years. And let's get that recording. Here's Peg in Watertown.
Hello, my name is Peg Cheka. I am the library director at the Watertown Public Library, and I've worked at the library for about 26, 27 years. I've lost track. We had a major renovation and expansion of our facility. It was roughly at the beginning of the construction project, 25,000 square feet. We are now around 40,000 square feet. We maintained our historic 1906 Carnegie Library. We also renovated the 1984 edition, and then we added on a whole new talk, read, play, children's area, and large community room with an expansion option for the project. It was a labor of love, a labor of the community, a labor of people who believed in their local library and what we stood for and what we could bring to the community. We started back in 2016 at the presidential election with a referendum, an advisory referendum, asking the community if they wanted to support an expansion of the facility. And overwhelmingly, 60% of the populace voted yes, let's move ahead with that. And then we gathered people in the community who were invested in literacy. They were educators. They were retired educators. And we asked the community what they wanted to see in their local library. And they wanted to see a drive-up service. And they wanted to see a large community space. They wanted to see an expanded children's room, private study rooms, all those kind of options that we couldn't offer at the time in the resources we had. So we worked in the library board. This has been a collaborative project with the library board and so many people who invested their time and energy and, of course, monetary resources to make this happen. Our biggest partner is the City of Watertown, followed by the Greater Watertown Community Health Foundation. And then we have several local families and individuals who also donated to the project to make it a reality. We just introduced a tea library at our library, and so people can come in and take a packet of tea home, and then we ask that perhaps they donate some of their tea back, and we're hoping that will be just something a little different that they can get from their local library.
A tea library. You know, that was great, Ben, and it does show that libraries are providing a whole lot more than books, although obviously books are important. But
yeah, absolutely. I mean, books are the foundation, the bedrock that libraries build on. But these other services that are coming up really show how libraries are responding to the changing needs of the community. So tea libraries immediately make me think of seed libraries, which are pretty popular in our public libraries. The Aram Public Library, I know, has a seed library, as do many libraries. But the seeds are free. You don't have to return them, although some do. Some do ask that you harvest seeds and bring them back, but they like to make sure that you know what seeds you're harvesting and things like that. But really, it's this intent of making home gardening more accessible to everyone. Like, you can just get seeds, pick them up at the library, and a lot of libraries are repurposing their old card catalogs. They're perfect for seeds, right? You've got the old wooden ones. You can pull the stuff out and find your seeds. That's a really big thing. I think another thing I've seen an uptick in is music and engagement with the arts. And so a lot of libraries, I know the Gaze Mill Public Library has a music instrument checkout program. So you can try out an instrument before you decide if you want to buy it or not. Like, maybe I want to learn how to play the guitar, but I've never picked one up. You can go get that there. I know the Fond du Lac Public Library, I'm a guitar player myself. So they have a checkout program for effects pedals for guitars, which can run $70 to $100 when you start looking at buying those. You can run through and say, like, do I like the sound of this before I actually spend my money on it? And you can try some things out, experiment. And to go back to teen programming, a lot of libraries are starting to put in recording studios. The Madison Public Library has a recording studio. Again, the Fond du Lac Public Library. I know some of the Milwaukee libraries have full recording studios where you can come in as a teen or even an adult and learn how to produce your own record and create music and arts, which I think is another like vital way to give back to the community and bring people in and make that more accessible to express themselves.
Jane in Duluth, Minnesota has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jane.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love this show as usual, always interesting. I think I was had a what I would call a first responder event. I was down and out. I was living in Albuquerque. I had lost my teaching job because I through a medical crisis, and I hadn't been there long enough for them to hold my position. So, thank goodness for the place. I didn't have a laptop anymore, so I went to one of the Albuquerque libraries, which gave you 2 or 3 hours to find, you know, to do research and work, find a job. I sat down that day at the end. Thank God, at the end of a row of heavy computers, right in front of the reference desk. That was the help, because all of a sudden a guy sitting next to me, he was falling asleep, and instead of his head moved forward, but he fell on top of me, and my feet were, you know how you twist your feet around library chairs?
Mm-hmm.
So I went down, the chair went down with me, his chair followed, and he followed on that. And I swear that the reference librarian sitting there literally jumped over her desk to help me.
Oh, man. What a story. Thank you, Jane, for calling.
Yeah, that's incredible. And, you know, not that this was the reason the gentleman fell asleep, but one thing that I have been hearing a lot, not everything is positive in our communities. And so a lot of library directors and staff are being trained to administer Narcan. To our folks as we look at the opiate epidemic and how that's affecting our communities. So we're seeing, especially in some of our larger communities, that they have Narcan available and they're able to administer that as needed in the library, and they're comfortable doing so. And we're even seeing some like fentanyl testing strips and things like that being made available to try to reduce the number of sort of those unfortunate overdose events that happen. But on a maybe more Wisconsin note, I was talking with the Door County library director, and just 2 weeks ago, on April 2nd, there was a huge winter storm up there. You know, not abnormal for Door County, right? But power was out all throughout the county. But the libraries were able to retain a lot of that, and they had intermittent connectivity, and they sort of acted as not as first responders, but sort of that second responder space where they were available. They had internet connectivity, so people could come in and report, I don't have power, I don't have internet, which is really hard to do if you don't have power or internet and your cell signal's not good, you can't really report it. So that helped the first responders and the folks coming in to make sure that they could restore power and energy to the peninsula. They were able to sort of like find out where they should go and target it. And we had all these stories of, you know, using them as well, warming centers as that was going on. Local businesses were setting up, and like people that work from home were working remotely from the library. And so during this big snow event, the libraries really were this critical spot where they could get people access to the resources that they needed to go back to their normal lives. And luckily it was April. So in Wisconsin, we saw a quick thaw from that. But, you know, those couple days, if you don't have power, that can be pretty devastating.
Carlene in Oregon, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Carlene.
Hi there. I just wanted to share that this year, the Village of Oregon opened our brand new fabulous library that overlooks Natural Prairie. It's such a wonderful expanded space. The traffic in the library, the numbers of library cards, the services, the programming that has been made possible by this new library is just fabulous, and I'm very fortunate that I'm on the library board as a village board member and have been able to see this process. Good things about our head librarian, Jennifer Way, who is just fabulous. I'm sure Ben knows her and If you live in or around the Village of Oregon, please check out our new space. It's amazing.
Oh, Carlene, thank you so much. Comment, Ben.
Yeah, I know Jen. So I live up in Sauk City. She used to be the librarian in Prairie du Sac. She built a library here, then moved down to Oregon and built a library there. She is an incredible person. She's the person you bring to do that. And that library is beautiful. I have staff that live there that rave about it. I've visited and I love it. It's just an incredible community center, and I'm so happy that it's there. It's amazing.
Yeah, Carlene, thank you so much. And I want to hear from Beth in La Crosse. Beth, hi.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having this program. I'm here actually with my daughter as well. We're both big fans of the public library here in La Crosse. There's a wide variety of programs. We have our own little free pantry that helps our neighbors that come in for shelter and might need additional items. There are tons of activities for kids. There's a creative lab that has open hours where people can do sewing or doodling, and there's a tool library, and then there's just amazing programs, both online and in person, like Dark Stories La Crosse. So I cannot tell you how grateful we are for our La Crosse Public Library.
Oh, Beth, thank you so much for calling. It is a very nice library, Ben.
It is. And thank you for reminding me, too, of the little free pantries that are springing up everywhere as folks that deal with food insecurity. I see them at more and more libraries, and I see them kind of in two different shapes. There's kind of the more traditional food pantry way where you can just grab some food to bring home to eat. But what I've also seen springing up is, especially in teen areas, is snacks. So we see a lot of middle schoolers and teens go to the public library after school as a place to sort of study, do their homework. And we know, we talk about this a lot at DPI on the education side, that you can't learn effectively if you're hungry. And so a lot of times it's just snacks that they can eat while they come from the middle school or the high school. They can go to the teen area, they can grab a snack, and they can get their homework knocked out before they head home. And we know we'll just see more teens in the library if we have snacks, because let's not joke or kid ourselves. Kids love snacks.
you know, funding. Libraries are funded typically through tax dollars, in at least in part, but the funding formula can be a lot more complicated than that. Maybe give us a brief overview of what goes into that equation.
Sure. So there's a multiple funding streams of how libraries are funded. So at the state level, we have some of the programs that we do that I've already talked about, that we get funding from the state government to do that. We also get funding for library services contracts. One of the big ones of those is the Wisconsin Talking Book and Braille Library. So state funding provides access to audio and Braille books for those that are visually impaired, which is a crucial lifeline. That's one of the, I should have said that earlier, it was one of the most exciting programs that we have, but we contract that out. But when it comes to local public libraries, there's system aid funding that comes through my team and gets distributed to 15 regional public library systems throughout the state. They are our huge partners in the work that they do. So they provide services to their public libraries to allow public libraries not to have to deal with some of the minutiae of just day-to-day, like making sure your internet is connected or having consultants to help do space design planning and things like that. They do any number of things to help, and they're critical partners in this work. So the state funds them to provide all these services that then the local municipalities can bring their own tax dollars into to customize their library to meet the needs of that individual community. So there's kind of this baseline level of support that's provided by the state, and then local municipalities put their own money in to fund the people that work there and really drive the direction that they want their library to go. We also have access to some federal funding. So we get funding from the Institute for Museum and Library Services. There's a Grants to State Library Services and Technology Act. That's a lot of words, but basically what it means is there's federal funding given to all states to try out some new things. So we use that money to do a lot of interesting programming. We give grants out to systems to do some testing out of new technology and things like that. One of the more exciting programs we've done in the past couple of years is a teen internship program. So over the summer, we're able to fund some teen interns to come work at public libraries, learn about what librarianship is, and try to diversify our field, because we are a pretty white field and we don't reflect the communities that we always live in. So this is a way to get kids excited about it and hope they go to library school, because we're just the same in the library profession. We're seeing a lot of churn, a lot of turnover, and we're really trying to bring more people into the field. And I think the best way to do that is get them interested as kids and then hope they go to college and get their library degrees and come back to Wisconsin and serve our state. So county funding also, I have to mention county funding. They're another critical partner in the way the libraries are funded. But basically, it's that. There's a lot of funding that comes down, and then that local municipal funding really funds the operation and allows libraries and local communities to meet their needs.
And we have a short comment. Clara talked with the director of the Hudson Area Public Library about how they've overcome a financial crisis a bit. Here's what she had to say.
My name is Shelley Tugas. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Public Library. I've worked here since 2016, and I became interim director and then director in 2019. Our funding issues in the past have been such a nail biter for us, but we reached a resolution last year that involved transitioning from a really unique, uncommon structure of a joint library to your traditional municipal library, and that changed our funding mechanisms. So we went from having an operating deficit of $150,000, we were able to clear that up, and we have, from the city of Hudson, an additional about $340,000 net to spend. On May 27th, we will celebrate our 120th year as a public library in this area. We were one of the original Carnegie libraries, and that is our 120-year anniversary. So we have this new funding mechanism that has kept us open and the potential for new space. And so we're looking at the upcoming year, the upcoming couple of years, as an incredible opportunity for our community, and we are going to celebrate this anniversary all year.
Pretty cool, man.
That is super cool, and I was kind of riding shotgun along aside a lot of those conversations, because we also have on our team consultants. So we have an administration consultant and also just general public library consultants who help libraries through issues like that. And that's one of those places we partner with our library systems, because we couldn't do all that work alone. We're a small but mighty team, but we partner with our library systems, and we can really see that reach, because that was a long time coming. And wasn't the most fun for a lot, it's political, it's contentious. And so to see a good result out of that is just the result of teamwork across a lot of different partners. And it just pays dividends for the people of Wisconsin.
Kate in La Crosse, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Kate. We lose Kate. We must have lost Kate. That's all right. Let's go to Vanna. Let's go to Vanna in Cedarburg. Hi, Vanna.
Hi. I thought I'd call in and comment about school libraries or school library media centers, as they're called in many school districts. There are many things that are happening in school libraries today. The director, usually the librarian, is a classroom teacher or a former classroom teacher, and she teaches skills. Many of the school library media centers have computer labs where they are teaching computers to the students and teaching information skills as classes come into the library media center. So it's a very active area, not a quiet area like, you know, they used to think it would be. And I say that because I was a school librarian for 35 years, and I was also a trustee of a public library. So I got to see both sides or both areas of libraries. And today I think it's really fantastic for the beautiful school libraries that they have now, and the instructional support that they provide to the classroom. Also, I do want to say something about the public library. Public libraries offer so many things, especially programs. Programs on, for instance, I went to a program on scamming. I went to a program with an author. There are all many types of programs for senior citizens. The senior citizens don't have to sit home. There are so many different types of programs that they can get involved in, knitting and
a lot of different things. A lot of different things. You're absolutely right, Vanna. Thanks so much. Comment.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for the shout out for school libraries. This is April is National School Library Month. So we're celebrating school libraries all month. And I could have another 45 minutes just to talk about the amazing things happening in school libraries. But just kind of very quickly off the top, that's one of those places in a school where students have voice and choice. So a lot of places they're assigned readings and assigned things they have to do. That school library is one of those. It's again, like a public library in a school. It's a safe place. They can go there and they can choose what they want to read. They can choose to like encourage and go that direction, which is just an amazing place to have during the school day for kids. And there's so much collaboration that happens between our school and public libraries. And that's, again, one of those really powerful multiplier effects. When you get a great public library staff member and a great school librarian working together, the benefit that can have for kids is just amazing.
And it works at the university level, too. I want to give a shout-out to the librarians at the Steenbach Library on the UW campus, Barb Sisolak and Heather Schimmann. Help me put together and really design some programs that I was able to use through a podcast broadcast class I was teaching. And they, for many years, have helped with big smiles on their faces and really done a marvelous job. So it works at the UW and other universities and colleges as well, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I mean, it takes all of us, librarianship. You know, you picture librarians as sort of you have whatever stereotype jumps into your mind, but there are so many different ways that librarianship presents. And there are special libraries, there are academic libraries, there's public school. We all love information and getting people the things they need. And that's really what librarians do, no matter where they're working. They have that same drive to be like, we want to find stuff out. We want to connect you to the stuff that you need. At the end of the day, that's what librarianship boils down to.
And just one final word on volunteering. There's opportunities. I know there are opportunities to volunteer at a person's own local library.
Absolutely. That one of the best things you can do outside of just thanking your local librarian, if you can get involved in a friends group or on a foundation board, those are great ways to get involved and provide sort of some real human power to those libraries, and those groups are always willing to have you. The other way would be also to just let your librarian know you'd be interested in serving on the library board if that's something that does appeal to you. We need more library board members in the state, and let them know it might not be immediate, but that's a good way to get in and really support and shape the way your library serves your community.
And Kate had emailed and said, don't forget that the Fred's group also help fund programs, too.
They do.
Oh, Ben, it's always a pleasure. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Our libraries are doing a great job. And listen, as you've listened to this today and you haven't spent any time in your local library, let me encourage you to just stop in. Take a look around, talk to the librarians there, and you're going to be amazed at what is going on in your local library. It's a lot of good things. Ben Miller, thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Larry.
Appreciate it very, very much. Ben Miller is director of the library services team at the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. Well, we talked a little bit about books. And we're going to talk about a book coming up. It's a cookbook, actually, and it's titled Happy Days, the official cookbook. Did you ever watch the Happy Days TV program? I did a long time ago, but I think you can still watch it on many stations. And we'll be talking with the The official author, Christina Ward, who has authored Happy Days, the official cookbook. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Brings back some memories, doesn't it? Oh, that song, it's a special place, I think, in the hearts of Wisconsinites, at least those who watched the 1970s hit Happy Days. It was set in Milwaukee. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. And with us next is the author of a fun new cookbook based on that series. It's called Happy Days, the official cookbook. From A to Zucchini Bread, written by our guest, Christina Ward. She's an editor, author, a number of other books. She also makes regular guest expert appearances on Fox 6 Newsreel Milwaukee television program and on public radio stations across the state. Do you remember the Happy Days show fondly? What's your favorite comfort food? Join us with your questions and comments, experiences. Number to call, 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Christina Ward, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to speak with you always.
I tell you what, it's hard for me to believe that Happy Days debuted 50 years ago. I suppose, was that is that what gave you the idea to do this cookbook?
So a little reverse on that. Yes, the 50th anniversary, and so many of us as a Wisconsinite have a relationship of some sort with the show. And so the publisher, Inside Editions, working with Paramount, who owns the Happy Days show, or they own CBS, they approached me and asked if I'd be interested in working with them to develop a cookbook around Happy Days. And I enthusiastically said yes, because I didn't want some New Yorker or some Los Angeles-based writer who wasn't going to get Wisconsin and wasn't going to understand Milwaukee to do this project. So it's a little outside my wheelhouse. It was great fun and a great challenge, and I'm excited for people to read it, and especially for the Wisconsinites, to see if they can clock some of the very specific Wisconsin references.
Yeah, there are many of those for sure. When did you first start watching Happy Days?
As a kid growing up in the 70s, I remember it as part of kind of the, I think, was it a Tuesday night? Or, you know, as part of the regular kind of TV watching you did as a family. And I think we don't really have that when it was just three channels and, you know, everybody had to argue about what you were going to watch. And so some of these sitcoms, and especially the family-oriented ones at the time, really were about a family viewing experience. And I remember it that way.
Yeah, and I, you know, the show, I guess because it was kind of a family experience, maybe that was the appeal to so many people.
I think so, and it also harkened back to that 70s and nostalgia for the 50s as generated by things like American Graffiti, even though like the first proto-pilot episode was on Love American Style as a skit. So I think of the time period, there was a little bit of this hankering for the old days, and it made for really fun TV show because of that time period. One thing in doing the research means rewatching nearly every episode of Happy Days is that there's two levels of humor. There are jokes for like the younger crowd, but then there's also some sneaky kind of double entendre kind of jokes for adults that I didn't catch the first time. But when I rewatched it, I was like, oh, that's what that means.
Well, you've got a really fun book. It's kind of filled with history about the show and a recipe based on a specific
episode many times.
Yeah, that was part of the fun research, is picking out some of the food themes, because there are episodes that very much mention specific foods, as well as just the general, over the arc of the like decade-long life of the show, is if you think about watching it, so many of the framing scenes began either at the Cunningham's breakfast table or at the dinner table at night. And of course, so many of the scenes happened at Arnold's, the diner.
Which is, it was the kind of, Arnold's Diner, you know, the kind of place that I think everybody wanted to go to.
It's so cool, right? You had the coolest cool guy, Fonzie, hanging out there. And then you had the kind of wannabe, they were jocks, they were musicians. They were still just a bit of on the outside with Richie and Potsy and Ralph. And you could start to build a whole world around what was initially their high school experiences and then their college experiences. And then you get to see the growth of the characters that you come to know over time. And if anybody remembers watching early days from the first season, Fonzie wasn't allowed to wear a leather coat on TV. But now can we even think of the Fonz without his signature leather coat? I mean, right, we're in Milwaukee. So the bronze Fonz immortalized forever on the banks of the Milwaukee River.
I had a leather jacket that was very close to what the Fonz had. And I thought that was so cool.
They made copies of it for boys. So if you were late 70s or 80s, you could definitely be the coolest kid on the block by having a Fonzie kind of jacket.
So how'd you select, what was the process like for selecting the rest? And we will get to the recipes here, but what was the process like for selecting them?
Well, once, you know, I decided to take on the project and started reviewing old shows, I could see some of the themes. So I definitely wanted recipes that were Arnold's. I got a screenshot from the YouTube to watching a video of what the actual Arnold's menu was. And so I definitely knew I had to recreate that. So that was a part of the inspiration, and then specific recipes from the show. And then also understanding this is about that nostalgia, the comfort food as viewed through 50s and 60s and as well as the 70s. And so I wanted, those are the framing devices I gave myself. And then also some rules about this was not going to be something where you needed to travel to, you know, exotic Kathmandu to pick up that single ingredient. This was going to be a cookbook for folks who, out of your pantry, you know, maybe if you made your shopping list, you'd pick up a couple extra special things, but nothing that was going to be outside the scope and ability of your average home cook.
Yeah, I love that part of it. I took a careful look at the recipes as I was going through them, and I was saying, oh, I've got that, I've got that, I've got that, I've got pretty much everything.
Yeah, and that was one of my goals. I did, you know, update and modernize things. For example, when you think about a lot of diner food, and that's deep fried French fries and onion rings. But I worked out in doing my research and doing some development is how to do those in an air fryer. So very modern of today, and so many folks have air fryers. So versus, you don't have to get out the fry daddy, you can just get out the air fryer.
And you got, and you did the recipe testing, I'm expecting, yourself.
I did it. That's part of, I like doing my own development and testing. The only caveat, the asterisk I'll put on that, is I can't eat meat. And so I usually recruit a couple friends to help taste the meat-based recipes.
Well, you know what else the book did for me as I was going through it? Not only thinking about happy days, but bringing back a lot of memories from my own childhood and growing up with my, basically my mother's cooking. And I got so many interesting recollections that I hadn't thought about in a long time. And that was a real pleasure for me in going through your book.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad that you had the kind of good feelings about it. Because that way, again, one of the goals was to, again, bring people into that kind of happy days world again and to their own families and to do more than just give a set of recipes. So I'm so glad. That's one of the kind of minor intentions, and I'm glad it worked. And that's the goal of, I think, any really good cookbook. And that's, I'm not saying mine's great, but any good cookbook should bring you back to bring you to a place there where you would like to spend time.
And I certainly did. And maybe just a quick run through as to sort of how the book is laid out.
Sure. We tried to follow kind of standard practice of an all-encompassing cookbook. That means there's breakfast recipes, lunch, snacks, dinners, and desserts, with a couple of extra fancy ones. Remember, if you went to homecoming or prom or it was an anniversary and everybody went to Chez Antoine's for their fancy dinner. So it gave me a great opportunity to include a couple, you know, fancy recipes as well. Again, a general cookbook that's going to cover all tastes with vegan and vegetarian options, as well as, you know, very traditional comfort foods from that period of, you know, kind of 50s, 60s, 70s. And so that was the organization, to have a really balanced cookbook that you could mix and match and incorporate all of the recipes into different meals.
And you know what I also liked? You've got tons of photos from the show, and then, of course, some great photos of the food itself. And I thought, man, getting permission maybe would have been a difficulty, but from the way you describe how it came together, probably wasn't a problem.
And no, it wasn't. And that made it such a joy to work with Inside Editions and with Paramount to develop this cookbook, is because this was a joint project. And so the Paramount folks gave nearly carte blanche onto whatever images that all the book design folks wanted to use. And the Insight team did a great job of the photography of the food. I'm just so pleased at Punch because I'm a terrible photographer. And that was one of the things. I was like, are you going to make me photograph things? Please don't.
Food photography is an art in and of itself. And it's been captured well in your book. Christina Ward, our guest today. She's the author of Happy Days, the official cookbook. And you can join in. I can give them the number, but here it is. It's 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on WPR, and then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller.
Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Saturday, what a day. Grooving all week with you.
The 1970 sitcom Happy Days, 50 years old this year. And to celebrate, we're talking about a new cookbook that features food that would fit right into the show. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is Christina Ward, author of Happy Days, the official cookbook. She's an editor and author of a number of other books. She's also making regular guest expert appearances on Fox 6 News Real Milwaukee television program and, of course, on public radio stations across the country. So are you a Happy Days fan? What questions do you have about writing a cookbook, perhaps? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And, of course, we would love to hear from you. You have several, I forget how many now, trivia questions sprinkled through the book. And I was trying, you know, I had a lot of fun with those because I'd read the question and then I'd go to the back of the book to find out what the answer was. And I have to admit, I was not any good at all at getting them. I'm sure others were a whole lot better than I would be at that. Did you wrote those all yourself?
I did. A lot of the trivia was a product out of all the research I had done on the show, and I proposed adding trivia questions as just another element that we can add to the book. And it's also, if anybody's really in a cook in a kitchen, you've got the downtime, right? Of you're waiting that 10 minutes, you're waiting that 15 minutes until you can take the next step. And it's a personal thing for cookbooks is, you know, it's nice to have something to read in the cookbook while you're waiting for the next step to come along. And so I'm like, trivia, everybody loves to rack their brains a little bit, and also with the deep dive question of just that miracle of like, I remember this. I remember this tidbit from 47 years ago.
Well, let's look at some of the recipes. One that came to my mind right away was the Hawaiian Luau Club Sandwich with a secret sandwich spread. And what struck me on that one was Spam.
Yes.
I hadn't had Spam in I don't know how long, and I'm going to make this darn sandwich because I also like the secret sauce that goes with it. But and that came up. This sandwich was part of one of the shows.
It was mentioned in the Luau episode in season two. So, look, I didn't check my notes. That was off the top of my head. Anybody wants to invite me to Happy Days Trivia, I think I could probably do really well, at least for the next 6 months. That's part of the fun part of doing recipe development and thinking about what would that Luau sandwich look like? What would it be? How can you make this like new and interesting and still reflect the show? And, of course, Luau, Hawaiian, and Spam. Spam is such a big part of Hawaiian food culture that it was so much fun to try to figure out a way to make that fun, delicious, and still part of the show.
Well, it brought me back to occasionally we would have Spam sandwiches when I was a kid and, kind of heat the Spam up a little bit. But here, this has got pineapple, this is lettuce, there's bacon in there, and the secret sauce, which is kind of mayo and chili.
Yeah, it's a very simple secret sauce.
Well, that's what I liked about it.
Yeah, and what it does is it just adds a little bit of texture and the flavor and a kind of a glue, if you will, to help kind of keep it all together. If we think about like smooth condiments like a mayo or a chili, it really does help kind of keep all the bits together, especially when you're making a big sandwich with a lot of layers. Having a little bit of a sauce of some type, really, that's just more of a cooking thing. It keeps the construction going. And this is not a health food. I mean, per se, so, so this is a special treat.
that's for sure. Well, one that Clara pointed out to me was Howard's Leopard Lodge potato salad, German versus American. And I love German potato salad. And I took a look at that recipe and I thought, heck, this is one I can make with almost blindfolded.
Oh, good. I mean, that's sometimes the idea with these very old-fashioned, these family recipes that we have like fond memories of, the variations, is we do know essentially what's in them, but we're not always sure what the ratios are. So having a recipe like that is very traditional, but also very Wisconsin, because that was one of the things when some of the editors, the California-based editors, were like, German potato? What? Why? I'm like, oh, no, no. Oh, no, you must have that. If this is going to accurately reflect, then we need to have potato salad both styles, both American and the German. If everybody remembers too, is more of a vinegar based and it has bacon in it. And so again, a little different than your standard potato salad.
What's the story behind the grilled cheese and peanuts?
Isn't that funny? That is directly taken from the Arnold's menu. And when I research that, when you look at what the menu is, and I'm looking at the book right now, I'm looking at that to see if they were able to include a sign. I was like, if you guys can include the sign, that would be fantastic. And because everybody, if you think about the show, everybody's sitting there in the background, over the top of the doorway, looking back into Arnold's, was that menu sign that listed everything that they were serving. So it's, again, a fun way. And for whatever reason, I was never able to figure out exactly why it was with peanuts, but it was. Maybe there's a Super Happy Days researcher, or maybe Tom Miller, the creator of the show, can call in and let us know why peanuts.
Kate wanted to know in an email, have you had a reaction, maybe perhaps not, but wondering if you'd had a reaction from any of the stars of the show?
Not yet. I hope so. We all love Fonzie as a character. And then as time passes and the actor Henry Winkler kind of was able to grow and separate himself from the character. And then we discover that Henry Winkler is this kind, brilliant actor and writer and fantastic human. And so I guess if I had a dream, Henry, please call. I want to give you a copy of the book.
Oh, man. You can join in, too. Quiet Crowd today. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@WPR.org. Actually, the apple, what was it called? The apple snack cake. There's another one. I like apple cake. And here's a recipe that I think I have everything right now in my cupboard or in my refrigerator.
Oh, that's great. Then you keep a nicely stocked pantry and fridge, Larry. That's good.
I do.
Well, this is the notion, too, is so many of the times if we're thinking back, this particular cake was inspired by my my husband's grandma, who lived with them in this very idyllic kind of happy days kind of house and life. And she was the wonderful chief cook and house cleaner for their family, and lovingly so, and was notorious for always baking little, like, snack cakes, little simple sweets for after school. And so this definitely inspired by Mary Wanda Colling, and kind of an homage to her cooking of that style, and something that's simple, easy, and can be whipped together in under 15 minutes.
That's going to be made this weekend in the Mueller household.
Oh, fantastic.
I've got everything, and so I'm going to go ahead and do it. And, you know, I had a lime tree, Limey, and Limey, named by my daughter, young daughter, at the time. She was pretty young when she named the lime tree. And I would get upwards of 30 or so, 35 limes on that tree, on Limey. And so I thought about Limey a lot when I saw Arnold's Cherry Limeade. I thought, oh, man, does that sound good.
Again, another simple and from the Arnold's menu. This is, you know, something that was referenced in an early episode to have this custom cherry limeade, because Paula Petrolunga, who was very much kind of one of Fonzie's early love interests. and so I think that's wonderfully, it's a refreshing drink that I think sometimes we forget about. And so Wisconsin, if we think about cherry season's coming up, and limes, unless you have your own private supply, as Larry does, fairly easy to get, and it's a really delightful, refreshing drink, and again, easy to make.
Yeah, it is indeed. Jill in Racine, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, so many things come to mind. Cherry Coke, that wasn't what I was going to mention, but grilled cheese, grilled jelly, oh, cherry Coke. Oh, I had cereal with sliced bananas. No fast food.
Yeah?
And I grew up in the 50s. I was born in 49, so I was little then, but I loved to dance, even when I was little.
And you would, I'll tell you what, that theme music for Happy Days is kind of, you're going to at least be bopping around, jumping up and down a little bit, if not dancing to that. Who, do you know who wrote that song?
Oh, you just stumped me on the trivia. I don't know. Oh, maybe someone can call in and remind us who that was. Because I know in the first season, they actually used Bill Haley's Rock Around the Clock. And the show then became more popular. It was an they didn't predict it was going to be as popular as it was, and then realized that they should commission its own theme song. But again, that's a good question. I don't know who wrote the song.
Jeff just told me that Pratton McLean.
Okay, I was not going to bring that out of the recesses of my memory.
Wrote that, and Pratt McLean, if he had any of the rights on it, he probably put one of his kids through college.
Let's hope.
let's hope for sure. Well, okay, let's move her on to another one that Clara liked a lot was the spiked orange eggnog. What is in that one? And I didn't look at that one myself. I'm just going on what Clara liked.
Well, in Milwaukee, in Wisconsin, we do love our eggnogs and Tom and Jerry's, which is, you know, a little variation of it. And so I really wanted to include this kind of recipe, again, reflective of our personal culture here in Milwaukee and Wisconsin, and for the holidays. And so the difference here is that it's using orange juice, because orange and cream and the nutmeg and then those spices go really well together. And it has that kind of vanilla, orangey, spicy feel that I think is extra warming, extra delicious. And citrus does a really good job of kind of cutting a little bit how rich an eggnog can be. So it feels a little bit lighter.
It feels a little bit lighter. Okay, well, there we go. And another one that I had, which brought back so many memories of lutefisk dinners. When I was a kid, we would go to, there were some lutefisk dinners, and I did not like lutefisk at all. But every single lutefisk church dinner that I ever went to, they always had Swedish meatballs.
Yeah.
And that was the... That was the extra. If you didn't want to eat the lutefisk, you could have Swedish meatballs, and I would load up on those. And you've got a nice recipe. Tell us about that one. Where did that come from?
Well, again, these are some inspired by the character nods,
sure,
the things they mentioned, as well as, again, our regional cuisine. If you were going to be kind of middle class fancy, that was Swedish meatballs were a party staple. And without any irony, they're delicious. They're really good. And that's why I tried to, like, get rid of any of that kind of ironic twist. This is a genuine having fun kind of cookbook. And so that inspiration comes from, again, what folks would actually serve at family holidays or, as you mentioned, just kind of community, church, union hall gatherings. And the one thing that I liked about in developing this recipe, again, inspired a little bit from my grandmother-in-law's cookbook. So Mary Wanda was also a great recipe collector. And that was, for me as a food historian and doing recipe development, that was a great resource. So I was able to go back to some of her very old recipes from the 40s and 50s and review, analyze, update, tweak them a little bit, and bring them back to the future for today.
How did you get so... I saw a little note in the back of your book about how you got interested in cooking, and some of it had to do with the fact that your mom wasn't such a great cook.
She was terrible. it was not good. The one very kind of, again, sort of mid-century-ish, and people will either sympathize or they'll have a flashback, is there was something called glorified hamburgers, which we kids named gorified hamburgers, which was essentially a smear of, like, ground beef with a pat of butter, salt and pepper on half, just raw hamburger, on half the bun, and then you stick it in the broiler, which guaranteed that the edges would be black and the middle would be raw. And, you know, these are the kinds of meals that my mom made. And it was just not good. And I understand, I'm fully sympathetic. I know there's folks out there who say, I can't cook. And so I keep that in mind when I'm writing and doing recipe development and try to keep the instructions really clear and the ingredients simple. So someone who thinks they can't cook can actually make something without it becoming gorified.
Well, and you're right about the recipes. They're pretty straightforward. And your directions for what to do along with, what goes into the recipe are great as far as I'm concerned. You know, I had to smile when I saw the pizza bowl, sheet pan pizza. When I was a kid, I didn't know anything about round pizzas. Because my mom, and she made these great pizzas, and they were all made in a sheet pan.
Right.
Quarter size, I think it was, sheet pan. And they were delicious.
And that was, again, of that time period and very regional, that we are the home of, like, rectangle pizzas. And that goes back to, I didn't want some, you know, California or New York writer to do that because they don't have that experience, Larry, like you and I do. And like so many of us had. And we know that, oh, yes, of course the pizza bowl was going to serve a rectangle pizza. And again, to do it at home, so many of us grew up with that sheet pan pizza of just it's simple and it's still delicious. And I find it really funny is that it's getting marketed today by some of like the fast food or the chain pizza places as Detroit pizza. When I see that, I'm like, oh, no, that's just sheet pan pizza. We've been doing that for a long time.
And that's another one I'm going to make just in honor of my mother's pizza, because those were, I love those. But boy, it was really a treat when she'd make the pizza.
And it was a treat. And it's so funny. Sometimes I think that we get away from that with the convenience we have with food access today. And of course, then with delivery and so many restaurants, which, again, I'm not knocking them. They're great. But there's something to be said about just making dinner. And it doesn't have to be a four-hour, four-course meal, but just spending 30 to 40 minutes in the kitchen. Maybe you've got one of the kids, if you've got kids or grandkids, as a helper, doing all the cleaning and the chopping, and making that dinner together, and then spending time together and eating dinner together. I think that that's one of the quintessential American family events that we can all replicate, that we can all just eat a meal together.
I've got a daughter coming home in a month or so from college, and I've already noted that that's something that she and I will make together.
Oh, that's lovely. I can't wait to hear how it goes.
I'm telling you, I'm really looking forward to that happening, and it will happen. Blueberry shortcake. You know, I always think about strawberry shortcake, but blueberry shortcake intrigued me.
Yeah, a fun variation. I think that's something that it comes again from my food history background, is that in the 1800s, when folks developed shortcakes, it was very much a sweet biscuit and whatever the seasonal fruit was. And so using that, it was fun to tie it back to the show as Joni's favorite. Joni loved blueberry things, and so did Richie. And so, of course, right, if you think about that, the Cunninghams would use a blueberry shortcake. And it's just fun as a preference. And also, it hopefully makes people think a little beyond, and that you could make a peach shortcake, strawberry, cherry, raspberry, blueberry. But, of course, we wanted to highlight the blueberries in this particular book.
And just back to the pizza a minute, because I think that you gave a nod to Laverne and Shirley, which was a spinoff of Happy Days.
It was a spinoff. And I like to think, and though the research isn't officially in, is in my mind, the Pizza Bowl was definitely the Polish Falcon in the River West neighborhood of Milwaukee. And so thinking about that and how that would be. And so that's the few recipes to include as a nod. And that was part of the fun of doing the research, is some of the minor characters and some of the themes that develop. So, of course, there's something to honor Mork and Mindy, which was another spinoff.
Yeah.
From Laverne, Laverne and Shirley, and a few of the other shows. And there's even the penultimate Mork and Mindy spinoff episode, which is when Robin Williams shows up with Fonzie and Laverne. Because Mork is trying to analyze human dating practices. And so Fonzie is his observed object, which I'm not sure if Fonzie's luck with ladies was indicative of everyone else's.
Well, you know, and that one, I can't bring that up out of my brain, but that would be fun to go back and look at.
And that is part of the fun, is that this with streaming now, conversely, when we only had three channels and to watch these originally, with the streaming channels, is people can go back and you can watch these on demand. You can watch either start to finish, or you can just find a favorite episode and rewatch it. And then make it a little bit of a fun party trick is, does that hold up? Is that as funny as I remember it? Sometimes things are funnier now. And then sometimes the jokes don't always carry over.
Well, you have written a great book. It's brought back so many memories. And you've given me a number of recipes to try. And I thank you so much, Christina, for putting it together and for being with us today. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for the kind words. And thanks for everyone's calls.
Christina Ward, our guest today. Her book, Happy Days, the Official Cookbook. Take a look at it. I think you'll get as big a kick out of it as I did. I'm hoping, anyway. I think you will. Well, tomorrow, PJ Leish returns to talk about the big year ahead for cicadas and answer your other questions. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on WPR. I'm Larry Mueller.